Support for WPR comes from the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau with the 2024 Birds and Art Exhibition. Avian-themed artwork by 107 artists through December 1st. LYWAM.org.
Support for WPR comes from Lundeen Tree, a tree care and removal company serving the Madison area, growing relationships with trees, their landscapes, and the communities they inhabit. LUNDINTREE.com.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
Absolutely virtual, although we are not virtual.
That's true, we're not virtual.
Real. And we're not AI.
We're not AI yet.
We're not AI
soon,
yet.
Maybe?
Yet.
Is it going to happen?
Moving on.
We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe.
You bet.
We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and some of your voicemails.
That's right.
And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call, 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics today, Zorba.
We're going to talk about whether or not you should throw away your smartphone and go back to a flip phone. I mean, kind of an interesting thing.
I will admit,
But we do use our phone for lots of other things. We're going to talk about that. And then we're also going to talk about research of psilocybin as potential use as an antidepressant. Some very provocative research that I think we need more research on,
Do we have any mushrooms in our recipe today, Zorba?
We've got one pot, tomato basil. We do not have psilocybin mushrooms in our recipe today.
That's good.
But it's one pot tomato basil pasta. Really good, easy to do. Sometimes you just want to get something on the stove, get it to your family. This is the recipe for that.
Sounds great. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's welcome our first caller. This is a listener in West Allis, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
All right, well, I am calling because my curiosity finally got the better of me, and I wanted to ask some questions about Ozempic. Mainly, you know, I'm 32 and just got out of a very stressful job that left quite a weight gain.
Oh, what kind of job was it?
The federal government.
Oh, I've heard of the federal government. Have you, Carl?
I think they're listening.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
They're not.
But you got out of a really stressful job, and you put on some weight. How much weight did you put on?
Ooh, let's see. Maybe 45-ish pounds.
Oh, that is a lot of weight. Yeah,
that's a lot of weight. In the course of a year, so it's not the best.
Sure.
And this is kind of a recurring issue, but I can work out, I can diet, I can get the weight off, but it just seems to be a constant struggle, and I'm starting to get a little nervous about diabetes, which brings me to Ozempic, because it is my understanding that it can help either, maybe not prevent, but stave that off. But I guess I'm just curious, because there's so much... not even advertisement, not even information, like, regarding it. It's on social media.
Oh, right.
That it's kind of almost seems like not a designer drug or whatever, but you know what I mean.
Well,
I'm generally curious.
Yeah, first of all, the drug has been around for a while. It's a drug, GLP-1 drugs, are used for diabetes. And they've actually been around probably 10 or 15 years, but the first drugs in this class, Victoza, one of the first drugs, was not associated with weight loss. And it turns out Ozempic, Mounjaro, and others are associated with weight loss. The GLP-1 agonists appear to reduce the desire to eat. They change a whole bunch of things that are going on in your gut and in your brain that appear to reduce weight. So there are a couple of issues here. So first of all, all, when you stop taking the drug, it stops working. Although there is some other research that's going on now that maybe you take the drug for 2 to 3 years and then you ease off the drug and then you're in a different pattern of eating. That remains to be seen. In other words, we don't have any good studies on that. But generally, stop the drug, weight goes back on. The drug costs, the regular drug costs $1,200 a month. It's a lot of money, right? So you're talking about, you know, you're talking about anywhere between $10,000 and $15,000 a year for the drug. Now, what's interesting is there are compounding pharmacies that are using drugs that are like Ozempic, and they come at a greatly reduced cost. And I had a patient in the office the other day who was on it and lost 30 pounds. And I don't know very much about this because I don't know about the compounding and what they're, but it's a salt of Ozempic. So it's not exactly Ozempic, but it's like Ozempic. And how it's produced is really, I don't know. It's sort of in the shadow industry. And also what you're actually getting in these compounding pharmacies is sort of shadowy too. But they're regular pharmacies that are actually doing that. Is the drug good? Yeah, I think it works for a lot of people. So are you thinking about going on it?
I guess my question is, because kind of what I've been seeing on social media is there's a controversy where there's a lot of people on it that maybe shouldn't be on it, or maybe we don't have all the information. I tend to be a little skeptical when drugs first come out, especially that, not that this is exclusively marketed to women, but just because, you know, I kind of like to wait to see how it goes. I just am wondering if it's safe and who are ideal candidates.
But first of all, Ozempic itself as a drug has been around, I think, 8 to 10 years. It's been around for quite some time. And I mean, I might be wrong with that. I don't have the net in front of me. So, and the drugs in this class have been around as used for diabetics. In other words, that's what they're designed for. Now, what do they do in non-diabetics over time remains to be seen. There's some issues of whether or not people then develop an Ozempic face. In other words, do they begin to lose subcutaneous tissue around their face? And so then you get wrinkles. There are some people who believe that may be the long-term result of taking it if you are not a diabetic. So the data is really, you know, it's we don't have good data on this. You know, it's early data. You know, it's buyer beware. If you're going to do it, you may want to do it and look and say, look, I want to do some things in the short run. I'm going to spend the money. I'm going to do it for a year. You know, it's a number of vacations because it's expensive. Whether or not I would use a compounding one at a pharmacy, I'd be a little leery about that because I don't have good data on it. May work, but it may not be good for you to use. So that's kind of where it fits. You know, maybe you could, you know, there are people that lose 40 or 50 pounds, but they stop, the weight comes back on. But that's not everyone. That's many people. So if you were motivated and conscious and doing things and you were on and then you started reducing the Ozempic, you might be able to keep it off. I mean, that's what I would do. I don't use the drug in my practice myself, but that's the way I would look at it.
Okay, so basically, just still, despite the drug, diet, exercise, good habits.
Well, it's hard. You know, you know, as you've noticed and everyone else, it's easy to put on the weight. It's hard to take off the weight. I still remember the movie Supersize Me. Do you remember that movie, Carl?
Oh, right. Is that where you had the guy at McDonald's for a
Where I went to McDonald's,
time,
and if they said, do you want that supersized, he got it. They, in other words, they prompted it. And he put on something like 25 or 30 pounds in a month. His lipids were gone. His cholesterol was off the wall, a whole bunch of things. So it took him 1 month to put it on, went back to his normal eating. It took 6 to 8 months to take it off. I mean, that's just the way the body is. The body holds on to calories. So, well, good luck. You're out of the job. Are you in a different job now, or are you between jobs?
Yes, I'm in a different job now, much less stressful. So that's step one.
Yeah, that is step one. And, you know, going to looking at diet and exercise, that definitely is the first step you want to do. You want to do it in a natural way, if you can, before you actually either use Ozempic trade brand, or you go to one of the compounding pharmacies. Good luck. Not easy to do, but hey, you've got a better job. Things are looking up.
Exactly. I'll get going on this somehow.
There we go. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. And this is, I think, a topic that Tom Clark would love to talk about, maybe.
Wait a minute. A positive Tom Clark topic? I mean, that's hard to believe. That is hard to believe.
He would love this, because we're going to talk about smartphones.
Smartphones.
Versus dumb phones. Or flip phones, dumb phones.
I call them smartphones, and I call the other dumb phones.
It's okay. Well, I don't think the phone's mine. Phone. Yeah, right.
By the way, if you go to YouTube and you look at Steve Jobs, when he actually introduced the iPhone, mm-hmm. he thought it was a better phone to make phone calls.
Okay.
He really, in that first introduction, he did not realize at all how absolutely revolutionary the phone was. So it's really worth looking at that YouTube video. So yeah, so go ahead.
So my phone's sitting over here. I usually keep it turned upside down during when we're,
doing
the show.
Why do you turn it upside down?
Because it's distracting,
distracting, right. They're always
and
distracting.
I want you to just pull out your phone. I want to see how much screen time, daily average screen.
Okay, go to settings.
Yep, settings.
I know how to do
screen
that.
Time.
Look
this
at
is
it.
For
my
Apple
average
users.
Screen time. 1 hour, 46 minutes, and that is, I was down 45% from last week, so last week I probably did like 2 hours.
That's really good. Time. I feel like that's pretty good because the average is way higher
than
that.
So do I get a medal? I don't want anything virtual. I want a medal. I don't look at my phone as much as you do. That's what I need.
I know. I'm over 3 hours a day. I guess I'm still under the average.
What are you doing 3 hours a day?
I don't know. A lot of it's like, you know.
Yeah, a lot of it's like junk.
Just
you
texting
can't even remember.
People about soccer practice and
well,
GPS,
different.
How to get
that's
to this
different.
Soccer
Yeah, but you
field.
Go down the rabbit hole. You go down the rabbit hole of looking things up, don't you?
I do.
I mean, you know, what
researching for the show. Yeah, how about that? That's what I'm
what
doing.
What do you do besides?
Doing my job.
But what rabbit hole do you go down on your phone when you're going down? What do you think you look at when you're looking at junk that doesn't have any meaning?
Maybe music stuff.
Music stuff.
Maybe guitar stuff.
Guitar stuff.
Yeah, that
looking
kind
at
of
people.
Junk.
Don't you feel like you're getting educated by your phone by doing that? But the problem is you're withdrawing from life. You're withdrawing from interaction. And I think that's the real issue behind this. And that's why some people are going back to a flip phone.
Right.
Because a flip phone, you know, it's not like an iPhone. You can't do much with the flip phone. You can't take all these pictures that nobody looks at.
It's a phone. You use it to do phone calls.
It's a phone.
Or basic texting.
Texting and a flip phone.
It's tough.
You've got
you remember
to push
it?
The button 3 times. I never did it.
You know, no.
I mean,
did you have
I
a BlackBerry
it.
Ever?
No, because I knew, you know why I didn't? I thought I would become addicted to it.
And look where we are now.
Yeah, look where
Tell
we are
us
now.
About this addiction. Yeah.
Well, anyway, what happens is 95% of all young adults keep their phone, this is the article, nearby every waking hour. And everyone, 92%, do that while they sleep. And they don't necessarily put it on do not disturb because if anyone wants to send them a text or anything, they want to make sure when they're a teenager, they're up and at them. Like, this is really an important text. Now, we know when you were a teenager, didn't you spend time on the phone a lot when you were a teenager?
Just a landline. And I remember, getting like a sweaty ear because you had the phone up
what
to
did
your ear for a long time. But it's like talking to friends.
But what did your parents say? Did you ever own phone in the house or did you use their phone?
We all had one phone. I feel like maybe at one point we did like an option where you could get your own line. Like my brother and I would get our own phone line.
Yeah, but we had two phones in our house.
You
one
did?
For
okay.
us, one for the kids. That's what we did. And so they were on the phone. And I remember in my house when I wanted to talk to like guys and girlfriends and other things, my parents would yell at me to get off the phone. Mm-hmm. And I had to walk 3 blocks away and in a phone booth. Remember those phone booths?
What's that?
There was a phone booth.
Isn't that what Superman used?
And I
that
would
little
put
room
in,
he
I did
used?
Not, I did not change my clothes in the phone booth, but I would put in a dime and I would call people and stand in this phone booth, sometimes in the rain because I couldn't use my phone at home. But connecting to people is one thing by phone, but looking at your phone too much is not a good idea. So the reality is, what do we do about it? Well, a flip phone is kind of revolutionary. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to go back to a flip phone. And are you?
I've seriously considered doing it. But then I made a little list, like what things could I do without and what things can I not do without on my smartphone?
You know, I've got there's another setting on your phone.
What's that, off?
Yes, that's right. You turn it off.
I've tried this. Where you can go to grayscale. Right. You can do that. Grayscale. And it's supposed to make it less enticing to look at because everything's in black and white.
Really. Okay.
I tried that for a couple days and then I just went back to color.
I grew up in black and white. It would not do anything. But really going to the idea that you actually have an off button, I think it's really important. Taking the phones, when you're having dinner, everyone puts the phones in another room, like in the bathroom, shut the door.
Sure.
I mean, we've got to have some way of doing this. Otherwise, you know, because you've been in restaurants where four people sit in the restaurant and they're all looking at their phones.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Why
they
is
see
that?
It all the
I
time.
Don't really understand why that is. I understand why people do it, but I don't know. I don't understand why a phone can be more interesting than a human interaction. Do mm-hmm. you know why?
It's just it's the allure of it's just vast, endless content. I feel like where
well,
you can just you're
people
just so distracted.
More boring than a phone?
Some people are.
Moving on, 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Remember, you can leave us a message because you can call us anytime.
On your flip phone. Call us on your flip phone at 800-462-7413. Leave us a voicemail. And let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida.
Well, I was just listening to this evening about tinnitus, and I just want to tell you that my tinnitus disappeared after I got hearing aids. It's really made a big change in my life. Thanks.
You know, that's...
Have you heard of
actually,
that? Hearing aids helping with tinnitus?
That is an excellent point. Well, yeah. When we have tinnitus, when you have ringing in the ears, mm-hmm. often if there are other sounds in the back, you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I have tinnitus, and I always have a radio in the background or something in the background, then I don't notice it. Now, when I think about it, it comes to the foreground, and then I notice it. So right now, when I'm talking about it, it's much louder. And when I don't think about it, I don't notice it. Well, hearing aids make a lot of sense because then you're getting stuff in your ear. It's like sound in the background. And the answer is yes. It doesn't have to be a special hearing aid. It's just something that improves your hearing. And I haven't really thought about that. When I discuss tinnitus, I talk about how we really don't have a cure for it. And the answer is we do have a way to make it better. If you have hearing loss, get a hearing aid, and the ringing in your ears will be less, and that's probably pretty much a universal thing. Thank you so much for your point. You know, our listeners really come up with good ideas, and I love to have them share their ideas, all sorts of ideas, mainstream medical ideas that are outside of the mainstream. Keep them coming. We love them.
That's what we're here for. And we get a ton of calls and voicemails and emails about tinnitus. A lot of it.
Yeah.
Do you think there's more of it now than we, or do we just know more about it now?
No,
people are more aware of it.
Well, I don't know, because we have earphones. There are more earphones around than we had.
When
I was a kid, there were earphones. It'd be in your house with earphones. Mm-hmm. I mean, now you can put earphones in your ear and you can be everywhere you want to be. Mm-hmm. You can be walking down the street. You can be in the John. Mm-hmm. You can be practically anywhere you want to, and there's music, and it's delivered directly to your ears. So is there more tinnitus now? I don't know what the data shows, but I think the answer is yes, and it's because we're listening to louder and louder things through our earphones. You know, now, when you put on your earphones, don't you like to jack it up and make it really loud?
I don't, actually, because I have slight tinnitus, and I think that triggers it when it gets really loud.
It triggers it when you jack it up.
Yeah, so I don't.
How about when you're in the car and you put on a speaker? Do you jack it up then?
I think I use a nice medium volume.
Seriously?
A reasonable volume.
I don't do that at all. I jack it up to the highest
volume. I actually ride the
volume,
too. Do you ever keep your hand on the volume knob in the car? Like, because, you know, music is dynamic. So there's sometimes, especially classical music, it gets really quiet, then really loud. I'm always trying to even that out with my hand. Yeah. My dad used to do it all the time. He used to drive with his hand on the volume knob.
Yeah. You know something?
I do it now.
I've always known that you have been strange, and you have now hit it out of the park.
I am my father's
son. You put your hand on the dial to turn it up and turn it down. Are you kidding?
All the time.
No way at all.
Well, how about with a movie? Do you ride the volume? Because sometimes it's like, oh, there you go. The dialogue disappears because there was a loud action sequence.
I move it and I set it.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Another topic, another time.
800-462-7413. Curated movies.
462.
Curated music.
7413.
How about public radio? Do you do the same thing? I don't like that. Call, so you turn it down, and
I just don't listen to
afterwards you turn
radio.
It up. Oh, no,
kidding,
no, I know that's a lie. I know that's
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind. It's your favorite segment, Zorba. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
All right, Zorba. Today's quibble comes via voicemail.
Quibble.
Quibble. I like that word.
Wasn't that a
Say
food?
Say it. It's fun.
Quibble.
Quibble.
Oh, and it was a game. It was a game.
Was
quibble.
It a game? Quibble?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay. I know Quisp is a cereal, but that's not even close to the same word.
No, sir.
Just a Q. All right, this is a voicemail from a listener in Oklahoma.
Hello, I listen to your show, and I just want to tell you that I don't think it's a good service to say that probiotics are not good. Yes, probably there can be some places where you don't get good quality, but if you get good quality probiotics, they can be very beneficial for your health. I can say from my own experience, it can help. It has helped me with my digestion, with my asthma. I think that Dr. Sorba should not tell people to save their money and don't buy the probiotics. I think that that's a bad recommendation. I listen and I follow many of the things that he probably says, but I completely disagree on this one. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
That's great. But that's really that's really.
I don't know
really
if you ever
call.
Said that. I'm going to defend your honor.
I never said that.
That might be a misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's
but it shows you
how misunderstandings can occur, which is why you always have to listen to multiple things to get good information,
sure.
Because sometimes you mishear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never said probiotics really, you know, really are not good. Now, I may have said in the past, we don't know what they do and how much they're, you know, how worthwhile they are, but I never say they're bad. And I don't think they're bad
yogurt,
for it.
Maybe don't buy the expensive
pills.
I'm
more
pills.
For a natural probiotic, which is yogurt, than for spending money on probiotics otherwise. But I'm not against them at all.
Right.
Brings up a good point, and they're very useful for her. And I think on an individual basis, it's really good to decide what is good for your body and then make that decision. You've got to curate your body yourself. And you do that with information we have on the show.
That's right.
By the way, before we go, I want to know,
uh-oh.
This is Little Debbie.
That's now, Little Debbie. It's now, how long
you know,
has
smell,
it been?
Oh, it's been, I think, 10 months. Now smell Little Debbie.
Still smells
can you smell
sugary.
It? That's right. So it's more, no, it's
sweet.
More than just sugar, but it is sweet. Well, smell it. I mean, there's something in there.
Ooh,
so Little Debbie is a probiotic of another kind. Because look at her. She looks exactly the same as she did. Nothing is eating Little Debbie. There are no bacteria. There are no ants.
No bugs.
Nothing
want
wants
that.
This.
No.
And we're going to keep this here until it finally. Until,
it'll be here forever.
No, until hell freezes over.
Okay.
That's what we're going to do.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And by the way, on our website, we are going to take a picture of Little Debbie so everyone can see Little Debbie. We may have done that in the past, but we are doing it right now just so you can get an update to see how beautiful she looks on the website, along with the please do not disturb sign written by someone else. Because it's not my handwriting.
Spoiler alert, the picture's going to look the same as the last picture that we took like 3 months ago of Little Debbie.
Yeah,
not much has changed with Little Debbie.
People want to see Little Debbie. You know, you're looking at the screen at dumb things. You can look at Little Debbie and say,
yeah.
Little Debbie is very, very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at Little Debbie and I meditate because she never changes.
Yeah.
She's zen.
She's in a cave meditating for months. More of your calls coming up, more emails, more voicemails, and we'll cook up some tomato basil pasta. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's sitting right across from me right over there. He's wearing a blue,
it's me.
What is that? Oh, that's a Brazil jersey.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
come
cool
on.
Looking
yeah.
shirt.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you
thank
been
you
to
very
Brazil?
Much.
Or?
Oh, my daughter-in-law is from Brazil.
Oh,
so
that's
my,
right.
They got married there. Been in Brazil like 3 or 4 times. I love Brazil. I'm going to go in New Year's. I'm going to be on the beach in Rio in Brazil singing in New Year's. Yeah.
That's amazing. Have you seen a soccer match in Brazil ever?
I have not.
That would
but
be something,
I
bet.
Oh, no, I take that back. I have seen.
You have.
And you know what they do? Unlike, you know, I mean, let's say the Packers and the Bears are fighting.
It's,
you know, you sit in the same stands, you know, and you're, and it's, they don't do that in Brazil.
They divide.
One team goes on one side, one team goes on the other side, and they let the opposing team out first, and the team that's, you know, that is the home team, they have to sit there for another half hour. Otherwise, there are fights that go on.
Just let them chill for a bit before they
it's
get
to...
It's
not let them chill. It's let the soccer, the opposing team get out of Dodge.
Oh,
it's
gotcha.
Nothing to do with chilling. Then you chill and you won't kill them? No, they're not there, so you won't kill them.
That's wild. Well, anyway, this isn't a soccer show. This is a healthy living show. So.
How do we get into soccer? Oh, my shirt.
Your jersey.
My shirt.
All right. Right. Before we get into this recipe, we've already wasted a lot of time. We always appreciate when our listeners chime in, of course, especially about our recipes. So I'm going to read an email we got from a listener named Katie. Hello. Though I love the recipe section of the show, Zorba always promotes the Mediterranean diet, and I find many of the recipes not to be part of that diet.
Mm-hmm.
It might be helpful to include more Mediterranean recipes, or at least designate which of the recipes on the show are part of that diet. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, she brings up a good point,
right?
Because we do a wide variety of recipes. So I think what we're going to do, certainly over the next 3 or 4 months, is accent Mediterranean diet recipes. I think that's really...
And this one is right here, right?
Right here.
What's it
called? So we got a good example. One pot tomato basil pasta.
Yum.
It's like a one-hit wonder. This is really this is really easy. So start out with 8 ounces of whole wheat rigatoni.
8 ounces whole wheat rotini.
See, so I'm already mispronouncing it. That's right.
I was thinking about going with your pronunciation, but sorry, people, I know.
It's garbanzo. I understand. There are all these words that I just get wrong.
Biome, the whole thing.
Okay. Half cup water. At least I pronounced that right.
Half a cup of water. Now, what kind of water are we talking about here?
Water.
Okay,
got it. 1.5 cups of low sodium chicken broth.
1.5 cups low sodium chicken broth.
Mm-hmm. 15-ounce can of no salt added diced tomatoes.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And we're doing this, among other things, to keep your salt afterwards, because then you'll cut down on salt. And if you decide you want to salt this afterwards, you put some salt on the surface of the spaghetti. And what happens is, especially if you use kosher salt, it'll ping your salt, the salt sensors in your tongue when you're actually eating, and you'll get the sensation of salt without having salt in the entire recipe. That's why we're using low salt stuff. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big T extra virgin olive oil.
1.5 teaspoons of your favorite Italian seasoning. And remember, buy smaller containers so that it stays fresh.
All right. Let's do the spices.
1.5 teaspoon of onion powder, garlic powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
Got it. And what else?
1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper.
1/4 little T crushed red pepper.
6 cups baby spinach chopped up.
All right, 6 cups of baby spinach chopped.
A half cup of sliced basil. And if you like basil like I do, you can move that to a whole cup.
And what are we going to use for garnish?
Parmesan cheese.
What
and of
else?
Course, freshly grated.
Of course.
That's it. Okay, the directions. Here's what you're going to do. Step one. The pasta, the water, the broth, the tomatoes, the oil, the Italian seasoning, onion powder, garlic powder, salt, crushed red pepper, put it in a pot. Easy to do. Cover it. Bring it to a boil. Uncover it. Reduce the heat as soon as it starts to boil. Medium heat. Stirring frequently for 10 minutes. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Stir in the spinach. Cook for 2 to 3 more minutes. Take it out. Garnish it with the basil and Parmesan. You are done.
That is simple.
It's a one-pot tomato basil pasta.
A one-pot wonder.
One-pot wonder. Easy to get if you would like a copy of this. Go to our website, zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. Or, of course, through FACEBOOK.
What's that? Facebook. Oh, yeah. I couldn't figure that out.
That's right.
800-462-7413.
Right.
That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to those phone calls now. This is a caller from Monette, Missouri. Hi.
Hi there. I have a severe rash on my body, and I've been to a dermatologist. It itches and it hurts.
So what kind of rash? When did it start?
Well, it's been going on for about 3 months or so. It started as a small patch on my chest. I have under both armpits now.
Wow.
It's broken out. Uh-huh. And this part that started on my chest, it's on my right side, under my right breast, has gone up my right side and under my right armpit.
Gee.
And yeah, and they did a biopsy and said that I have Grover's disease.
Grover's disease? I'm not familiar with that. What? I don't have a computer in front of me. What's Grover's disease? Did they tell you?
Well, no. I had to look it up on the internet.
What did it say?
It said that it's susceptible to white men over 50, and that's me, and I'm 82, and there's no cure, and could last for a year or so. All you can do is just put things on it to pacify it or whatever. Now, my dermatologist at first prescribed something called betamethasone,
which is a steroid.
Put that on. That didn't seem to help.
Yeah, that didn't help. I mean, it's itchy. Usually probably on your chest. Is that where most of it is?
Yeah, chest and under the my two armpits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the betamethasone didn't seem to do much. And I went back for a checkup follow-up, and at which time they did the skin biopsy because they didn't know really what's going on.
What it was, and then finally came up with this. Uh-huh.
And then she prescribed, let's see, it was chlorbetasol, I think.
A different cream.
So I put that on, and that doesn't seem to be helping much either.
So as she talked about, a lot of times they can do phototherapy. It's called phototherapy. You go into this box, and you get phototherapy for a lot of these dermatitises, you know, that are difficult to solve. Has she discussed that as a possibility? A light box?
Did not discuss.
Okay, so you're still itching. Were you put on steroids for a period of time to kind of get it to settle down, oral steroids?
No, okay. No pills.
Okay,
no.
This is what I would do. First of all, you've got a diagnosis because you had a biopsy, Grover's disease. And, you know, you looked it up. You know, don't know much about it. I know it's rare. That's about all I know. And itchy skin, and it tends to go away over time, but you're still suffering. And you've gotten a couple of creams from the dermatologist. You know what I would do? I'd get a second opinion. That's what I would do. I'd get a second opinion from another dermatologist, preferably in another town if your insurance does it. Because sometimes there are other things you can do. I'm not a dermatologist, but I know a lot of phototherapy where you go into this kind of box because it's a therapy that we use for itching for people whose eczema cannot be controlled, psoriasis can't be controlled. And it may be that giving you it's light therapy can make a difference. So I wouldn't just sit down if one cream didn't work and I got another cream, I'd go to another dermatologist. That's what I would do.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that because that's sort of what I was also thinking.
Yeah, because sometimes you need a second person to look at it. The first person, first of all, if it's a rare disease, then that means the dermatologist doesn't see it that often either because it's rare. You know, and if you're near an area with a university hospital, university dermatology clinic, they love rare birds because everyone will come in and say, look at this, this guy's got Grover's disease. Have you ever seen it? But then I think you'll tend to get people who are going to look at it and think about it. So you need another opinion from another dermatologist. If I had something rare, I would go to an institution that deals with lots of rare things because they're more likely to tell me what my options are. And itching is awful. I mean, we all know what itching is. It's very disturbing.
Yeah, this does it sometimes, but mostly it's just it's more of a pins and needles pain type of thing.
Yeah.
And I do put other creams and stuff on it. I've got some stuff called, CeraVe, CeraVe, I don't know, skin conditioner, moisturizer, something. Basically, it's souped up Vaseline. I smear that on, and that seems to help. If I can put any kind of ointments on to lubricate it, it seems to
which
help.
Which is really good. Those are the most natural way to try to treat these. And some of these conditions, many of them are self-limiting. I mean, over time they get better. But even though they're self-limiting, when you got it, it's not self-limiting. It's 100%. So get a second opinion. That's what you need.
All right. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call anytime, leave a voicemail. Let's hear a voicemail. This is a listener from Knoxville, Tennessee.
I have a number of autoimmune diseases, and I'm wondering if there's anything that you recommend for Sjögren's so I don't have dry mouth and dry eye and all that all the time. I have heard that taking vitamin C will help, but I'm curious about your advice. Thank you so much.
Well, Sjögren's syndrome, a syndrome means a bunch of different things that are going on. It's generally a long-term, it's an autoimmune disease that affects the moisture-producing glands. So salivary glands, lacrimal glands, dry eyes are often what people come in with. They're dry, their eyes are really dry. And if you look at it, people get fatigue, dry eyes, dry mouth, joint pain. They often have trouble sleeping. And the hallmark is really keratoconjunctivitis, where you actually develop something on your eye that makes it difficult to see, and you've got to actually treat it with an ophthalmologist to make sure you get moisture into that. But it can affect kidneys and blood vessels all over the place. And generally, what we do is you look at the associated conditions and you actually treat those conditions to see whether or not that's going to help with the Sjögren's syndrome itself. And then you have to look at treating the individual stuff, dry mouth, dry eyes. You try to treat it. And dry mouth, sometimes you just treat with lemon drops that you eat all the time to try to produce saliva. Dry eyes, you have to treat with drops. There's no cure for it. It's an autoimmune disease, so we live with it and we treat it. Very, very individualized. And the real issue is having a good relationship with your physician. And the reason is you want somebody who you can talk to and say, look, I've got this syndrome or this symptom and that symptom. What can you do about this? What can you do about that? And those are things that will help with it. So it's the relationship with your doctor that counts and the nurse practitioner, or anyone who's involved with it. Fortunately, there's no cure, but autoimmune diseases do not have a cure. They have treatments, and often the treatments can be effective, but the dryness for people just tends to linger on and on forever. So it's a problem that we can address with the appropriate medications.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, we got several emails about the shingles shot. So how about we knock these all out in one fell swoop?
I like it.
We're going to do idea. A shingles shot, double shot.
Guys, single shot, double shot. Okay.
All right. First email came from John in Iduna, Wisconsin. And
Iduna? Never heard of Iduna.
I hadn't either.
I do not know Iduna. Sorry.
Good one.
Sorry.
I appreciate that
I'm
one.
Not even a punster, so.
Oh, that was great. All right, John writes, hello, Dr. Zorba. I received my first shingle shot, Shingrix, a few months ago, and just over a month ago, I received my second one. Since the second shot, I have had pain and discomfort at the injection site, my left arm, that will not go away. Is this normal? What do you recommend to alleviate this? Thanks for all you do.
Well, first of all, it is often a painful shot, but usually it does go away. So it's not normal to continue to have the pain where the injection is. So maybe the needle just went into a nerve. But 95% of the time, these things go away right away. But about 5% of the time, they can take 3 to 6 months to get better.
Okay.
Okay.
Second one of the double shot. This is an email from Donna who writes, do you have any tips for post-herpetic pain after shingles? I'm already taking 300 milligrams of gabapentin two
good
times
drug
a day
to take. Uh-huh.
And 600 milligrams at bedtime. I'm also using a lidocaine cream, which doesn't seem to do much. Help, I'm miserable.
Well, there are a few things. First of all, you can take up to 800 milligrams three times a day of gabapentin. So she can push that up further. There's another drug called pregabalin, which is a relative, and if the gabapentin doesn't work, I would go to the pregabalin and take 150 milligrams three times a day. As for the lidocaine cream, I'd get rid of the cream and I'd put on the patch.
Okay.
Lidocaine patch used to be by prescription only. 4% lidocaine patch, leave it on 24/7. They'll say to take it off at night, but you don't have to unless you get a rash from the glue that's on the patch, but change the patch every day. So up the gabapentin, put on the patch.
Have a healthy living question for the good doc? He'll give it a shot. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls, more of your voicemails and emails, and we'll dive into another healthy living topic. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's right over there in his Brazil soccer jersey, still looking dapper. The number to call anytime with a question is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to our call, Zorba, let's do another healthy living topic. I'm just going to read the headline. There's new research supporting psilocybin's potential as an antidepressant.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, these drugs, when they developed, psilocybin and magic mushrooms, been around for a long time. LSD was invented in Sandoz laboratory, actually, as a treatment for migraine headaches. It's an ergot derivative. They thought it would be good for migraines, and clearly it might have done something for migraines, but it had side effects. And these drugs were going to be tested for depression, anxiety, and other mental disorders, and then it fell into a different purview because of Timothy Leary. But the real issue is now, is psilocybin, especially in microdoses, something that may be useful. Unfortunately, these drugs are in a class one category by the DEA, which means they're put in the same class as heroin, which they're not. But more and more research is slowly being done on this. And this is research published in the BMJ, looking at psilocybin and depression. It looked just a couple of studies. They found relevant analysis of about 430 people, not a lot, with depression who were actually on a double-blind placebo-controlled trial using psilocybin, and if not, they had a control, which basically they had a placebo. And lo and behold, people who had microdoses, small doses of psilocybin, not a dose to give you, quote, a trip, but a smaller dose, whatever that means, seemed to have a lessening of their depression. And we also know in some PTSD trials that people who take hallucinogenics appear to be able to, it seems to be able to help them with PTSD. So we've got a lot of issues here. We know that roughly one veteran a day commits suicide in the country, at minimum. There are more veterans that commit suicide from it. And many of those, it's from PTSD and from depression because of what they've done in the field. You know, and it's terrible. We know that there are twice as many suicides in this country than there are murders. People worry about murders. They go, God, I'm worried about murder. There was a murder, you know, in our city, let's say, and the city has 500,000 people. But they're more likely to know somebody who committed suicide. And I know of people who committed suicide. I don't know of anyone who ever got murdered. I mean, that's my life. But I can think of at least three or four suicides where I knew the person, where it was one degree of separation. And we also know that antidepressants, although they really work, they don't work for everybody. We know there's electric ECT that can work for depression. We know there's magnetic imaging that can also work for depression. But we have to start to look at this because psilocybin and possibly other hallucinogenics in small doses may work for depression. This particular study showed that it was more effective than a placebo. So we need more research. We need the feds to change it from a category one to a category three, at least put it where in the same realm as oxycodone and hydrocodone, because we know those kill 100,000 people a year, and yet psilocybin is considered to be worse than that. It's not. And so once the feds were able to do that, then researchers could research this more, and we could find out whether or not it is useful.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's go back to those phones. Let's try to help out a caller in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
This is Mary. Whoops, I'm not supposed to say my name.
Oh, you can say your name, Mary.
That's all right.
You can say your name, Mary. How can we help you? We like names.
Sure.
How can we help you?
Well, I've got this rash-like thing that's been going on for a couple of weeks.
Oh.
And it's hard to describe because it's not a typical rash, and I have no idea what it might be called. I do know that I've been insured that it isn't shingles. So that was my news.
Mm-hmm. How do you know? How do you know it's not shingles? By the way, you don't have. It's not a painful rash, or you know somebody who's had shingles.
Well, I know about shingles, but I actually, when I right before I placed a call to you, mm-hmm. I had gone to urgent care in Spokane, and the person that I saw there said that he was confident that it wasn't shingles.
Oh, got it. Somebody looked at it. Okay. So what'd they say at urgent care when you went? What'd they say the rash was?
He didn't. What mm-hmm. he said was he couldn't give me a diagnosis, mm-hmm. But he could recommend something to treat the symptoms, which was mm-hmm. primarily really itching. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I stand right now. So the thing that's tricky about it is that when it's not real red, so it's not as though I have these splotches everywhere, but they itch. Mm-hmm. So, and they jump around on me, so won't even agree to stay local. And so they'll itch here, and then that will go away, and then it'll itch somewhere else. And I think, oh, I've got another spot, mm-hmm. and then I go.
So do you have a cream that you're putting on it?
Well, I haven't started using one. Mm-hmm. And the person that I saw recommended uh-huh. one, but uh-huh. my pharmacist didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And so I just was able to get it yesterday, and I haven't started using it because I've read all the precautions about it. And I had a primary care who once said to me, Mary, if you read all of those things they say, you will never take a medicine in your life.
It's true. It's true. So if you rent a car, did you read the agreement on the car rental agreement before you sign it? Just want to know, are that fine, you know, the writing, the little fine writing at the bottom. But there are some side effects. But in the short run, generally creams, and I assume it may be a steroid cream, they're usually pretty safe in the short run. I mean, in the long run, that's a different issue. But for a week or two, not unusual, by the way, that I'll look at rashes in my office and I'll say, well, it looks like a dermatitis of some sort. I'm not sure what it is. Why don't we treat it with the cream? It goes away and it doesn't come back, and we don't have a full diagnosis of what put it on. So that's not unusual. Got to try the cream. Are you itching at nighttime?
Well, I tend to. It doesn't keep me awake at night, so I sleep through the night.
Good.
Without problem. Mm-hmm. But it the my first area, which was on my neck, mm-hmm. Was really, really itching. And,
okay.
But when I would go to sleep, then I wouldn't notice it until, you know, the next day if uh-huh. it was still itching.
Well, a few things. If it bothers you at night, a little Benadryl just before you go to sleep, probably Tylenol PM, one tablet will work. Got to be careful. It may make you dizzy if you get up during the nighttime because, you know, as you're older, the drug affects you differently. But that may help with itching. Colloidal oatmeal, a bath in colloidal oatmeal can also help with itching. And, of course, antihistamines during the day, even the non-sedating one like Zyrtec, can also help with itching. And the cream may help get rid of it sooner. So rashes are not fun. They're not fun at all.
Well, the thing that curious to me, when I feel it, it feels kind of gabby, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then it'll flip up. And so I thought, well, am I staying in the shower too long? So let's rule out that. I haven't changed any of my shampoos or whatever. I don't think it's that.
Sometimes we just don't find out what it is. Could be something you inhaled, could be, you know, something that you touch that you're allergic to, or just, I think rashes just occur on their own. Sometimes we just don't know exactly what they are and when they occur. So you may not ever get an answer to it, but I would treat it symptomatically and see how that works.
All right. Well, that sounds good to me. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Everybody says this, but I'm going to add to it. I listen to your show, and I love your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Take care.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. Let's try to help out a caller in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Hi, this is concerning kidney stones. I have a pastor that has kidney stones, and he swears by drinking concentrated lemon juice, and he says that it pulverizes them. So, thank you.
What do you think of that one? Have you heard that one?
You know, there are a lot of treatments for kidney stones. Yeah. They do not get pulverized by drinking concentrated lemon juice.
No.
Doesn't work. But you pass them. I mean, you know, might be you drink a lot of water or anything else. You may pass the stone. But no, it does not pulverize them. That would be wonderful because, you know, at any time, you know, or not at any time, but 1-2% of the population has kidney stones. Have you ever had a kidney stone?
I don't believe I have.
I have.
No, you have.
I have. And at one point, it was too big, and I had to get pulverized by the sound technique lithotripsy. But but the reality is, no, it doesn't work. But you can try it. It's a folk remedy that has no scientific basis.
What might work though? Do you know anything that does work other than just drinking?
Well,
a lot
you got to drink
fluids?
A lot of water. We don't know. We really don't understand why some people really cause them. Mm. For most people, some people we do understand if they're uric acid kidney stones, just like you can get gout. But calcium kidney stones that are common, we don't really know why people get them, and we don't know really how to prevent it at this point. Mm. And if we come up with something, I'm going to take it because I've had kidney stones several times.
So you're on top of this.
I'm on top of it.
You would know.
I am on top of it.
All right. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right. Before we head out today, Zorba, we love when our listeners contribute their healthy living tips to the show. The following email came from a listener named Bob, who writes... And he wrote this in all caps. This is all caps.
It's kind of shouting when you put it in
kind
all caps.
Kind of shouty, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bob in all caps writes, "Hi Zorba, less nervous hebephrenic laughter would improve the quality of your program. Best regards, Bob."
Hebephrenic laughter.
Do you want a definition of hebephrenic?
And yeah, I have no idea. I've never heard that before.
So this word was introduced to me as a child because, and it's a weird word, but I knew it because my dad would always, I would babble a lot as a kid. Uh-huh. Like we'd be on road trips and I'd just be saying God knows what, just babbling and babbling, kind of like this right now. Mm-hmm. And he would say, you know, "Carl, stop your hebephrenic babbling." He'd yell that back in the back seat. And he was he's a retired high school. He was a social studies teacher in high school and psychology. So he knew a lot of this terminology.
So what is it?
Here's hebephrenia, a form of schizophrenia characterized especially by incoherence, delusions lacking an underlying theme. That sounds like me. And affect that is usually flat, inappropriate, or silly.
Hebephrenic
babbling.
Hebephrenic babbling.
He would say that. My mom would start laughing every time.
I love it. She would laugh every time. Yeah. He knew that.
I feel like on this episode, I've maybe done a little bit of
that. That's right. Well, thank you very much for your concern. I do not think I will stop my hebephrenic laughter, but thank you for your suggestion. There we go.
There it is. Was that in all caps, your response?
All caps.
Your response
all
was all caps.
I got it. I got it.
Do you have a healthy living tip for the show? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, should we do this again next week, Zorba?
Yes, we shall.
With more or less laughter, or the same amount.
Same amount.
Same amount, okay.
Same amount.
Hebephrenic laughter. If you missed anything during the show, or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org, and of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
Anytime.
Oh, now we're doing it at the same time. I like that. Anytime. To leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor
on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.